we partnered up with the Associated Press with the two investigative reporters, Martha Mendoza and Garance Burke, because they've been looking at this story, this asking themselves this question of what is happening to all of these children who are winding up in government custody, and there are more and more of them, and why? And so this, you know, started a few years ago when they were looking at what the fallout of zero tolerance policy and family separation. And one of the questions they asked themselves was, where are the smallest children going? Where are they being placed? And that's when they, you know, broke the story of these tender age shelters. And so what we were seeing was a shift. There was a need for more sheltering of more children. And so the government opened up these shelters for the smallest children, for babies and 0 to 5 year olds, 0 to 12 year olds. These were shelters for very small children who basically had been separated from their parents. And so that got them looking at sort of how the shelter system was shifting. And they obtained confidential HHS data that actually showed them this universe of shelters and shelter programs that is operated by the Department of Health and Human Services Office of Refugee Resettlement. And so what a lot of people often, you know, it's not always clear is what happens when a child arrives at the border at the U.S. They're processed by Customs and Border Protection, by Border Patrol. They're not supposed to be there in Border Patrol custody for more than 3 days. And after that, they get transferred over to the Department of Health and Human Services, which has a legal responsibility to care for these migrant children. So they're a different agency, different system, and the idea is to provide shelter care for these children. And what had shifted, what they began to notice was that there were just more and more children in this system, and they were asking themselves why. And we were also asking ourselves why. What happened that, you know, what was leading to basically what became an impacted system when the administration took, you know, during the transition in 2017, Health and Human Services had about 2,500 kids in its custody. By the end of 2018, HHS had about between 12 and 14,000 kids in its custody. So that's kids that it was sheltering in at one moment, and it was more than it had ever had in its system at any given time ever before. So so that's what, you know, started sort of getting the reporting going, is asking, how did this happen? How did we end up with basically so many kids in mass detention-like settings?
And so who is behind the shift, and how was it game planned? How was it financed?
Well, so finance is taxpayer dollars. I mean, we taxpayers pay for the sheltering, this shelter network and system. And what happened was there were a series of policies basically that led to more children ending up in detention and for longer periods of time. What most people remember, what a lot of us remember, is the zero tolerance policy, which led to more children being put into the shelter system. But it wasn't in the thousands. You know, what we know now, at the time it was around 2,000 children. Now we know that that's been about 5,400 children total who have been separated. But what that started to do was, because it was sort of this very chaotic policy, children were being separated. They were placed in what HHS has as permanent shelters. And the children who were already there, the older children, because most children who are coming are unaccompanied teenage children, those children were displaced. And you saw the need for, where are we going to put all these teenage children? So they opened up these emergency, what they call emergency influx shelters. And those are shelters that are supposed to be used only in emergency situations for very short periods of time. And if you remember, there was the Tornillo shelter in Texas. There was Homestead shelter in Florida, which our film takes a look at, where, you know, these shelters that, you know, there were plans to house maybe 300, 400 children at one time, grew in number to, you know, to house 2,000, 2,400 children at one time. And so that had never happened before. And so zero tolerance contributed to that. But one of the things we're looking at in the film are the other policies that contributed to this, you know, basically growth of children in government custody. And those have to do with the sponsor system. And the children who go into HHS custody are basically in a shelter system waiting to be reunited with what they call sponsors, their legal guardians. So for the separated children, it was their parents. For a lot of the children who are arriving alone, it's also often their parents who have been living in the U.S., or an aunt or an uncle, a grandparent, and then sometimes it's just a known family member. And so what ended up happening is the administration began looking at those sponsors and vetting them extremely, and so that led to delays in the reunification process. But there was also another shift. One of the things that happened before Trump took office is there was a case involving teenagers who were labor trafficked when they were turned over to sponsors who actually were actually labor traffickers. And the AP had also done reporting. The reporters that we work with, Laurence Burke and Martha Mendoza, had also reported that the kids were being exploited in different ways, who were being placed with problem sponsors. So as a corrective response to this, Health and Human Services said we're going to better vet these sponsors and ensure that kids are being safely placed. Now, what shifted when President Trump took office is that they created new policies that actually began to criminalize sponsors, that actually began to, there was an initiative that targeted sponsors as smugglers for if they had any involvement in helping to bring their children, paying for their children to come to the U.S., they would be prosecuted for smuggling. And later, they began to share information, HHS began sharing information with ICE, which had never happened before. Those two agencies always kept that information separate so that parents and relatives didn't feel deterred in stepping forward to claim these children. So those two policies had actually a tremendous impact in the compounding of children who were waiting to be reunited with their parents or their family members. They weren't getting out because either sponsors were being arrested or were afraid of being arrested and weren't stepping forward to claim them.
What are some of the consequences, I guess, when it comes to policy, but also the children themselves? What are we seeing?
So what we started seeing, what ended up happening is, you know, with the opening of these temporary influx shelters, which are really supposed to be short-term stays for these kids, a few weeks, and then they're supposed to be released, is children started spending, you know, months. I think at the peak, it was, you know, the average was 90 days. Some kids had been there for 200 days. And these are facilities that are, you know, the requirements for this shelter program is that children be placed in the most home-like setting possible, in the least restrictive setting possible. But these influx shelters, because of the sheer number and volume of children that they had, were run like, you know, the children described that they felt like prisoners, little military bases, you know, that there are just so many rules. They were all bunked, you know, together. They, you know, 12 to a room if you were a certain age, or hundreds to a room if you were slightly older. Everything was very regimented, you know, and they often didn't know when they would be getting out. And so what we learned and what we reported on and explored in the film is what are the impacts to child development when you're put in this kind of situation, whether you're a small child or a teenage child. What we came to understand is that this kind of prolonged detention, this detention en masse, affects your psychological development at that these very particular ages where you're going through very specific transitions, where you are beginning to establish your sense of identity. Who am I in the world? These things are all happening in your brain during these teenage years. And when you're placed somewhere where you feel like a number, where you don't know if things are your fault or not, where you begin to self-blame, you begin to have these situations where these children begin to express suicidal ideation, where they begin to hurt or cut themselves. And the government itself actually recently found that in its inspector general for HHS found that there was actually a trauma happening, that the prolonged detention was having mental health impacts, toxic stress, that family separation actually was causing toxic stress and having that kind of impact, and that the mental health needs of these children who had experienced new trauma, those smaller ones or the ones who were separated from their parents, they were finding that the mental health needs of these children who had experienced new traumas weren't being met in this mass detention situation.
Tonight at 10 o'clock on WGVU Public Television, Frontline presents Kids Caught in the Crackdown. Director Daffodil Alton, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.